Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Conservationist Conversationalist. I am Brandon, and you're...
And I am Aiden Wood.
How's it going, Aiden?
It's going pretty good, pretty good.
It's been a crazy, crazy first few days of March.
Yes, I would agree.
It's been really, really insane, actually, in the sense of just politics. And today there was a huge tornado in Alabama, so hopefully everybody's doing okay down there.
Well, I mean, like, I think it killed, like, 22 people, so I don't think everybody's doing okay, but...
Ugh, it's just sad. It's unfortunate. It's crazy because everything that's going on, it's almost, like, tucked away right now. Like, you almost had to, like, go and look for that story, so it's terribly unfortunate what's going on down
there. I have a news app on my phone that, like, gives me updates throughout the day on, like, whatever the major news article was, and I got, like, 3 different news articles about that as, like, the death toll kept rising.
Ugh. Yeah, it's really...
Great area.
I know, it's one of those things where you hear the updates about it and you're like, ugh, it's just too bad. It's crazy when you think about it. There's another huge deep freeze dipping into the Midwest here in the Pacific Northwest. I know it looks like we're gonna warm up here in a little bit, but we're still under this sort of cold front here. You got the northeast wind that is just, yeah, so it is crazy weather. It's been a crazy 2019 weather-wise so far. I mean, when you look around, to like Hawaii had like snow on their upper peaks, and LA had snow right in the around in the foothills and the mountains.
All of our mountains that I can see on my walks are just covered in snow. Actually, there were a few days where it felt like it didn't feel like cold, but it, like, the rain was falling in a way that, like, it didn't feel like normal rain. It felt more like snow, which is weird because it didn't feel cold like that. It felt like it was like in the mid 40s, mid to high 40s, but it was surreal. Yeah,
it's really crazy when you think about it, because when I was younger, I used to, my friends in LA would send me pictures of their peaks, and I'd be like, there's no way those can be as, you know, high as the ones up here, you know, Baker and Rainier, because you're used to seeing just snow covered mountains. And like, yeah, no, Mount Whitney, you know, of course, is the highest mountain in the lower 48. And they're like, no, they're just, you know, that's that much warmer down here that we don't have snow covered peaks. And so it must be crazy to be looking at the mountains in Los Angeles right now and seeing snow. That's just crazy stuff. But guess then it's time to, we have a lot, whether it has to do with Trump or the race for 2020, I guess it is time to jump into the jungle to let the birds out. All right, we're here. We are, after all that we've witnessed this week, we are still here.
I actually, also full disclosure, I have not been as caught up with politics this week on account of the personal stuff. You know, like the launch of my other podcast.
Right. I've been like, you can push the podcast, Aiden.
Yeah. I was gonna wait till like the very end, like as a sign off. But I started another podcast. I'll tell you guys about it later. And I've just been very caught up with that, and I like have not been as updated as I try to be.
No problem, because I am an absolute glutton for punishment when it comes to all things politics. So I am
You're a glutton for punishment, but as you're clear to tell me during the our pre-conversation before we started recording, you're not a masochist. You're not such a glutton for punishment that you watched all of Donald Trump's CPAC
speech. Fair.
You just saw some clips of it and read some information about it.
I mean, when it starts off with this picture, I don't know if you've seen the picture yet, because you said
but I have to. I guess I have to.
Of him hugging the flag, and it, you know, I mean, and essentially dry humping it, if we're being fair. And by the way, here's my thing about the flag, right? People, of course, when they see like the video clips that I posted, they're probably like, "Is he Canadian?" Because I can only see my Canadian flag. But my American flag is right by there. I have always looked at the United States flag as a symbol of the people, not necessarily as a government. But I also see it as a symbol that I felt the freedom of speech is a very important thing. And that's when people get all riled up about burning it and whatever and that kind of stuff. I'm like, well, you know what? Whether it's if you're uncomfortable watching that, then what they're doing is working. That's what they're intending it to do. But so anyway, so that's my point about the American flag. I've always been very much in support of Colin Kaepernick, even though I've stood for the anthem my whole life. I've always been very supportive of guys like Colin Kaepernick and other people who have knelt for the flag. But what was interesting is that you had the real, you saw the difference between, the people who consider themselves patriots and the people who are considering themselves patriots for TV or for the internet. Because they all thought it was great, this picture of Trump, just like embracing the American flag. And then you had the people who are a little more old school, and they even had to say, we were turned off by it. That's not what you're supposed to do to the flag, especially not when it's in that sort of setting. And they actually were very, those old school sticklers for how you treat the flag, they were not fans of him doing that, which seems crazy with all the stuff that he's done. You wouldn't think that hugging the American flag would be up there as his, worst sin. But so I guess let's start with the CPAC while you're looking up that picture that is sure to be hanging in the White House soon. Let's start with CPAC. KPAX in Missoula, Montana, they posted a CNN news article, the 67 most stunning lines from Donald Trump's epic 2-hour CPAC speech. And 2 hours, by the way, is, I think they said, close to a record for him, might be a record for Donald Trump.
Know he had that kind of endurance.
I have a lot of things in my head right now, but I'm just going to let them all
But it's funny that you said that. I was just watching him hug that flag. Okay, let's move on.
Melania is so jealous. Or not, or she was like, finally, he's moved on. So I'm not going to go through all 67. It kind of started off with, he was talking about tariffs, and that's when you thought, actually, somewhere where he was talking about tariffs, he actually even said, before I go, and he thought, well, he's already done. But no, that was just the beginning, crazy enough. He was talking about tariffs, and he was talking about how way back when people were anti-tariff and blah, 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 and then they were for tariffs, and he's like, and then he said, then somebody was finally like, and then he goes, I want to say the word, but I can't say it. I want to say it. And of course, the crowd is like egging him on. They're like, yeah, say it, Donald. We want to hear you curse. And so that part was weird, okay?
And the word and the word was fuck.
I think so.
From my understanding. But he didn't say it. Supposedly, let Donald say fuck.
Right? Yeah, let Donald, free Donald.
Also, just a note about that. It's when Rashida Tlaib, I think that's how you pronounce her name, but now that I say it out loud, I don't know for sure. But when she said impeach the motherfucker, everyone was so up in arms about that. Mm-hmm. Then meanwhile, we have a whole conference full of people shouting at our president to say, to swear.
Yeah.
It's just.
And we know, by the way, if Obama had even said frick, they would have said, oh my God, he said frick, guys. He said fudge. But Melania, then he went into talking about, I'm paraphrasing a bit here, but he went to say, and Melania, the lovely first lady, she told me, you got to stop saying those words, but I like saying them and my fans love it. That's what he said, essentially. Then he went on to say, so everybody's having a good time. I'm laughing. We're all having fun. This is what Donald loves. This is his thing. He loves it when everybody is in love with him. And these people were. He called Adam Schiff Little Shifty Schiff, which we all know that if anybody else had done that, there would have been World War III. He's talking about the Green New Deal, and he called it the New Green Deal. And he goes, whatever they call it, because that's what they're doing to, it's like that subtle thing they're doing to undermine this movement by, liberals, which is the, environmental movement. So they're, and what, we talked about the Green New Deal a few weeks ago. We hashed the whole thing out. We obviously have our questions about it. But it's amazing how they keep trying to undermine it by calling it by different names. Pelosi did it. Now Trump does it. And he's like, I don't know, whatever they're calling it, as if it's some sort of pipe dream. And so he did this sort of skit, I guess. I don't know if you want to call it that, where he's like playing both the wife and the husband. And he starts talking about how, because he goes, he like kind of scoffs at the notion of wind energy. And he's like, oh, I mean, cause what's going to happen when the wind's not blowing? So then he gets into where he says, and I quote, when the wind stops blowing, that's the end of your electric. Let's hurry up, darling. Darling, is the wind blowing today? I'd like to watch the television, darling. That's how he thinks wind energy works. President of the United States. Then he got into this really weird thing about how he said that the Democrats don't want to be called the Democratic Party, only the Democrat Party, which is not actually true. It was actually, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, anybody can correct me, but I was reading this, the Republicans actually didn't want them to use the term the Democratic Party because it suggested they were the only Democratic Party out of the two, and the Republicans also supported a Democratic government, so they didn't want it to be assumed by some people that only the Democrats supported a Democratic government. But he claimed the Democrats, he said, I just think it sounds better to say Democratic Party, but I'm not allowed to. They don't want me to. I'm supposed to say Democrat Party. He went on about that for like 10 minutes.
I just wish that he would just like shut up about like semantics. But maybe he can keep talking about semantics as long as he doesn't say anything too inflammatory or violent.
Oh, I mean, he got to that. I'm sure. I'm trying to think. Did he get to anything violent? Maybe he didn't in this one. He must have been feeling extra special that day. I don't know. Of course, he's obsessed with Andrew Jackson. He said, we had the greatest election. In all fairness, I used to hear Andrew Jackson. This was now greater than the election of Andrew Jackson. People say that. No, people say it. I'm not saying it, right? I'm not saying it. This was the equivalent or greater. And before we move,
just for people listening at home, like what Brandon, all of that, what he just said, like there was no editorializing. That was all one Donald Trump quotes.
Yeah. Yeah. He of course was talking about Mueller and the fact that Mueller wasn't really elected. Oh, here's the one that I kind of love because I remember TiVo as like a little kid. So this one has nothing to do with anything really politically, but he says, I have one of the greatest inventions in history. It's called TiVo. I think it's actually better than television because television is practically useless without TiVo, right? TiVo is like from like the early 2000s. He still has a TiVo. I think he just means DVR, but he still thinks it's TiVo. So I love that. I don't know why. He then went back to talking about Comey and he says, I fire a bad cop. I fire a dirty cop talking about Comey. Oh man, then he gets really obsessed about the crowd. So this is the last part I'll go into before I get back to the wildfires at the end, his comments about the wildfires. But so he gets really obsessed about crowd numbers still, right? So he is still talking about the crowd numbers at the inauguration, which was how long ago? And he goes back to where he's talking about, the ground was really muddy and the grass was really wet, so they couldn't stand the grass and there were fences put up. That's why it looked that way. There were tons of people. It was huge. It was a giant inauguration. He's still like obsessed. He says, somebody showed me the other day. So that means literally Donald Trump is still looking at pictures of his inauguration because he's obsessed with how many people were there. He said that there's so much love in this room. It's easy to talk. You can just talk your heart out. You really could. There's love in this room. You can talk your heart out. It's easy. It's easy. It's easy. He said, we never had an empty seat. Never at one of his get-togethers. He kept his eyes. He even said this during the speech. I'm keeping my eyes on the seats and on the exits because I'm not seeing anybody exit. And I know tomorrow the fake news is going to say that people were leaving this early. And I've been going on for 2 hours and you're still here. And the fake news is going to try to say otherwise. I mean, who said this? It was a singer who said, I laugh because if I didn't, otherwise I'd cry, something like that. That's how I feel right now.
Let's move on.
Yeah, so well, I gotta get to the okay, just quickly.
Okay.
So this is his comment about the forest fires. The leaves, every once in a while you have to remove the leaves because they are so a guy smoking a cigarette. He throws it away. He doesn't mean it. That was his comment on forest fires. Mm-hmm. He then moved on to say, and that he believes that Gavin Newsom is a fan of his. I just want to tell you, he claims Gavin told him, I just want to tell you you're a great president and you're one of the smartest people I've ever met. Oh man. Yeah, so that's basically what we talked about. That's what the CPAC was all about. And
Well, I mean, there was other stuff probably happening at CPAC.
was
Just, I don't know. That Laura Loomer got kicked out of it because she
there?
harassed a CNN
No.
reporter.
I didn't even hear
That's.
that.
Huh? I mean, like, that was the first thing I heard at CPAC. That was like on day one or something.
Wow. I was so obsessed with the picture of him that, hugging the yeah. By the way, Q-Tip it was who said, "I really can't say. I guess I laugh to keep from crying." That's, I think, summarizes how we all feel. Look that up. So that was CPAC. That dominated, or not all of CPAC, but as you just mentioned. But so Laura Loomer got kicked out for so the war on media was still happening at CPAC then too. So
Yeah, but she was like he was like harassing a reporter or something.
okay. Yeah, so otherwise, in other politics, on the other side of the spectrum, Bernie was in Brooklyn, New York, Bernie Sanders, and he had a, I don't actually have the numbers here. I should have probably looked that up, as always. But his crowd, on the other hand, was gigantic. They were actually comparing it to a few of his crowds last year and showing the pictures and saying, look, hey, he's still got it in the sense of, bringing people in, with what his campaign's based on right now. He hasn't lost it in that regard. Yeah, it looks like, I'm trying to know. So it says, yeah, thousands of supporters in Brooklyn. I don't know why none of these places have an actual number, but if you look at the pictures, it was a huge crowd. Oh, campaign estimated 13,000 people in attendance. And
Man.
so yeah, so he's still attracting big crowds. It looks like more and more every single week that although we're hearing rumors that Biden might announce that he's running in the next week or so, and that Beto is potentially he kind of he sort of teased it the other day. We're still, it almost feels like, and I don't know, maybe you can jump in with your opinion here. Does it feel like for, especially for Beto, maybe not Biden because he's, he has a little bit more sort of being vice president at one point. I think he just has more of like a basis or a base around him. But with Beto, even though Beto has a lot of support from the people who supported him, even outside of Texas in his run for Senate, do you feel though like Beto now, with all the money that's already gone toward Kamala from people donating, and now the people who are behind Bernie, do you feel as though maybe Beto's coming in at the wrong time because now everybody's back on the Bernie train, or do you think that Beto still has a good shot if he announces?
I don't know that Beto necessarily has anything that he can offer that Bernie can't offer, either Bernie or Kamala.
Right, because he's
I
kind
don't
of
know that
in
there's, I mean, like when in the midterms he had all of this star power, but it feels like a lot of that sort of dissipated. Like a lot of like the attention he had grabbed. I think that like a lot of his campaign, like he was fueled a lot by like having that star power, which is it can turn on you in a second, like when maybe people find out like that you took money from oil companies or things like that. I don't know that it's sustainable in the long term. I think that he's going to need to build a longer reputation and run on that reputation as opposed to just running on star power.
Yeah, no, I think that you're exactly right. I think that maybe if he had announced a little bit earlier that he was going to run, he maybe could have jumped onto something before Bernie did. But I think that when Bernie, a lot of people who like Beto were people who did like Bernie, and then they were a little bit, when they heard about the oil donations and such. But I think if he would have jumped in first, people still would have been like, well, but we like Beto. He's charismatic. He's likable. And now I think that with Bernie in there and everybody's rah-rah for Bernie again, I think that Beto would just be jumping in at the wrong time. Biden, do you think Biden has a chance, especially if Kamala starts to flounder with all these things about her prosecuting history and those things? Do you think Biden still stands a chance, or is he probably out of it too? What do you think?
I think Biden definitely stands a chance. I would say Biden probably has more of a chance than Beto. I think that it would be kind of disappointing if the race in the primary came down to two white guys
right,
when we had
yeah.
such a diverse field. But I don't know. Realistically, I feel like although I do think that Elizabeth Warren also still has a solid chance. But
yeah, I know that we both like Elizabeth. I think that she definitely is kind of on the Cory Booker area where she's waiting for somebody to slip. Cory Booker.
I think that she has a strong chance. I don't think that, like, if we held the election today, there's no way she would win.
Right.
But I think that it's in the realm of possibility in a way that I don't think it's in the realm of possibility for, like, Andrew Yang or is Joaquin Castro still in the race?
Yes, he is. Amazingly, he is. Julian Castro.
Julian. Sorry. Who's the one I'm thinking of? Joaquin Castro. I know that.
Well, they're brothers, twins.
Oh, okay. Sweet. Yeah. Never mind.
Yeah. Andrew Yang is funny though, because, you know, of course I'm an Andrew Yang fan here. And Andrew has created a very interesting support system, because he's basically going along the lines of he's not looking for the money totals that Bernie Sanders has or Kamala Harris has, but instead he is actually just looking for those individual donations of $1, because if he gets 65,000 individual donations, he'll be allowed to debate in June or July. And so Andrew Yang's an interesting one, because he was on Tucker Carlson the other night, and I mean, which, you know, normally I would say why do you must have drawn the short stick, but you know, he was talking about and Tucker Carlson, of course, you know, it's funny, he never mentioned universal basic income on Tucker Carlson, but did discuss automation. Tucker, you know, thinking, oh God, yeah, because we got to make sure we take care of the workers, even though I don't know Tucker's history, so I'm just guessing, and I apologize if I'm wrong, everybody. I don't think Tucker has really ever, like, worked a hard blue-collar job in his life, besides maybe when he was in high school or something.
I'm going to see if I can call you out right now. I'm going to
look up
Carl.
That'd be great. Yeah, if you can, that'd be great. Well, runner. But anyway, so he talked to Tucker, loved his message, like, oh, yeah, hey, I can't believe I'm hearing this from a Democrat, but you're totally right about automation. We've got to get on top of this. I love Andrew. The only thing was, I wish that he would have brought up universal basic income, because I think he sort of chickened out because he knew he had Tucker on his side. And I feel like if he would have brought up universal basic income, Tucker would have started to go, whoa, oh no, now we're talking about socialism. And, you know, backed out. We have had all.
Well, I was just actually thinking earlier today, I watched the John Oliver episode on automation, which is the most recent one as of this recording. And almost all of the comments were about Andrew Yang. And it was the first time that I had heard about Andrew Yang outside of you talking to me on this podcast.
You're just following, because Andrew is gathering steam, man. He is going crazy. And he was also talking with who was it the other day too? I had it and I lost it. But yeah, anyways, there's a few clips of him, if you follow Andrew Yang on Twitter, of him talking about universal basic income, as well as the problems with automation. Now, interestingly enough, you do have the, like, Andrew Yang version of Bernie Bros who aren't really listening to Andrew Yang, and we're saying things like, oh, Andrew Yang's math is better than Bernie's Medicare for All. Well, they don't realize Andrew Yang is actually also for Medicare for All. So I don't know what the hell they're listening to with Andrew Yang, because he actually does list Medicare for All as one of his policies. Speaking of Medicare for All, though, Amy Klobuchar, as well as Nancy Pelosi as well, this past week, both mentioned that they don't believe the United States is ready for Medicare for All system, which I find sort of interesting, since 640,000 people go bankrupt every year from medical bankruptcy, and where does that money inevitably come from but taxpayers, when the people who can't afford their medical bills can't pay for it? So I would hazard a guess that if 640,000 people each year weren't going medically bankrupt, it might save some money. And also, if we took some money out of the absolutely ridiculous defense budget that we have, that might also help pay for it. Now, if you do go to Bernie Sanders' website, he does discuss how he would pay for Medicare for All and what the revenue would be and how much it would cost. And I believe the difference is 0.1 trillion in the sense of revenue. So whether you believe in Bernie's math or not, that's up to you. But if you do want to go check it out on his website, he does talk about how we would pay for Medicare for All. It's amazing to me that we still, and I would imagine that the candidates who are the most against it probably have something to actually lose if we did have a single payer system. It's just amazing to me that they seem to not have the well-being of actual Americans in mind when they're talking about it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I guess if you're ready, we can probably move on from the jungle, and we have some other stuff to talk about. They're still political, but what else? This week we had, well, of course, at CPAC, Trump did also mention, not to get back to CPAC, but he did also mention the fact that he will be signing as executive order the freedom of speech free speech executive order regarding college campuses. And this all stems from what happened on the Cal Berkeley campus a few weeks ago, where Hayden Williams was passing out Turning Point USA flyers to everybody. Turning Point USA, by the way, for those who aren't familiar, is a conservative organization headed up by Charlie Kirk. It's also Candace Owens, who is a part of it as well. We know Candace is loco, and so is Charlie Kirk. So they are, so he's handing out papers. He got into an argument with somebody on the campus. And the man who he got into the argument with, I guess it had enough and he punched him in the face. Now, that man was arrested, as you would expect, because he got physically violent with someone. But this kind of gave Trump and conservatives who have been saying that, oh, there's been censorship on college campuses regarding figures like Charlie Kirk and Ben Shapiro and Milo Yiannopoulos, that, you know, there's too much censorship and that there should be freedom of speech on college campuses, and campuses shouldn't have the ability to turn away people like that just because of their beliefs. Trump basically is saying with this executive order, if colleges didn't abide by the freedom of speech on college campuses, that he would cut federal funding to any college who disobeyed it. Mm-hmm. So he hasn't actually signed it yet, but he says he's going to as soon as possible. And it's interesting to me because I don't see where freedom of speech was actually harmed. And especially since Cal Berkeley, which, by the way, people can't see, but I'm wearing my Cal Berkeley t-shirt today in honor of Cal Berkeley. They were actually the originators of the freedom of speech movement back in the 40s. And they have always, they actually released a statement as well that said that they've always been for freedom of speech. And in this case, it was something that was taken care of right away. It's been blown out of proportion by several different outlets, and especially conservative outlets, who have made this out to be something that wasn't just an unfortunate happening that was resolved with the arrest of the man who hit Hayden Williams. So now the conservatives are using this as a way to move forward with their policy of trying to get people like Charlie Kirk and Ben Shapiro, Milo Yiannopoulos, and even Candace Owens onto college campuses without any resistance or pushback. That being said, the campuses know that, I mean, even at UW, there was a University of Washington, there was a big fight when a conservative pundit had come in to talk at the campus. There was a huge fight outside of it where police had to come in because riots had basically started because the students were so against who was going to be there. And so campuses have to weigh out what's best for them, right? Because if it's going to cause that sort of reaction each time, they have to be very careful about who they have speaking at the campus. I find this to just be really, I don't know. I find it to be, for the most part, useless. Different points of view are necessary, but I'm just kind of left shaking my head at this whole thing.
Yeah. There's a, So yeah, Trump's like just announced at the event that he'll be signing the executive order. All he said was requiring colleges and universities to support free speech if they want federal research dollars. He didn't address, and I'm going to read this next section from an article by Susan, I don't know how to pronounce the last name, but it's from the Washington Post. And it says, but some First Amendment experts and university officials greeted the announcement that Trump would impose an executive order with questions. Was this political rhetoric or an imminent policy change? What would qualify as a commitment to free speech and who gets to decide? And what money was in question, research funding or tuition grants for low-income students? There's a lot of questions he doesn't answer, even beyond that, what standards are you holding colleges to? I mean, it's so vague, it can be interpreted any way. And you and I talked about this over text, but colleges have limited resources. And a point that I always like to bring up when free speech comes up is everyone is inherently biased, even if you try to be non-biased, because even the things you give your attention to, or the things maybe a newspaper gives its attention to, we all have limited time and limited space and limited resources. We have to prioritize. And that's going to mean like prioritizing some thoughts or ideas over others. I mean, every university has a limited set of research dollars and a limited number of events that they could plan. Like, are they going, why should they be punished for not choosing to go with a provocative conservative, a white, possibly white nationalist speaker, when they could pursue any number of a wide range of topics from any field? We just need to acknowledge that colleges can't, just because something is an idea or is a viewpoint doesn't mean that it needs to be given a public space to be promoted. Or I mean, like, you can like get on a soapbox and go shout at people, and certainly you can do that even on a college campus. Neither the person who was handing out the flyers, Hayden Williams, or the person who punched him was affiliated with the campus. It just happened to take place there. But that's another thing. Like, even more generally, I lost my train of thought. But essentially, when a college is picking out what ideas they should promote or allow onto their campus to be promoted to students, they need to think about a lot of factors. Is it relevant? Is it culturally relevant right now? And is one of the big things, can students gain value from it that they can apply to their own lives? And is it ideology that promotes violence or harm? I think are three of the main things that should be considered. And like just saying that like you can't have any criteria for how you choose to invite people to speak at your campus is just ridiculous.
Anyways. Right. Because I guess the question for me would be, is it, if you were having, almost every college that I've been around, they have different groups inside of the college that are either the Republicans of the, you know, you'll have a Republican group, a Democrat group, you'll have an LGBTQ group, you'll have a go down the list of different types of groups that are in colleges. But for the most part, I would say that most colleges lean left, right? When you really look at the amount of students, it seems like there's probably a few of them that are exceptions, but the colleges I've been around are almost primarily lean left.
Depends on who you ask.
Well, I mean,
a lot of my leftist, like more leftist friends, consider our colleges to be very centrist. Maybe a little bit left leaning, but I mean, like, it depends whether or not you see something as leaning left or right. Depends a lot on like where on the political spectrum you fall, and you're oftentimes comparing it as like more right or more left to you.
Right. That's totally fair. I guess I'm meaning that when it comes to, and this is not the best example, but when you look at when people are voting in certain communities and they go to the college areas, they say, well, this is a college area, so they're usually going to be more of a Democratic vote. So that's what I'm kind of basing that off of. But no, you're totally right, and they probably are more centrist in that way. But I guess what I was trying to get at though too is you got to also ask yourself, not to say there aren't any crazy left-wing activists, there are plenty of them, but have we seen, or am I just blind because of my progressive views, have we seen somebody on the left who are, whether they be a violent Antifa, say, on the left, or and I even have a hard time saying that because I consider myself Antifa. But if you look at that, have we had somebody with the personality of Charlie Kirk or the personality of Ben Shapiro that is so divisive in the sense of gay rights and when it comes to minorities and that sort of thing? Do we have somebody on the left that brings that sort of divisiveness to a campus when they speak? I guess it would be like, say, ELF, right, which was the left-wing eco-terrorist group, right?
I totally thought you're talking about the Tom Hanks movie.
Will Ferrell.
Will Ferrell. Yeah, the Will Ferrell movie. Yeah, I was like, what's politically advice about that? Okay, continue.
So, the ELF, the eco-terrorist, it'd be like having them show up at a campus, right? And you know, they've been known to burn down places in the name of the environment and you know whatever, and maybe they have been at a campus, I'm not aware of it, but I'm just, guess what I'm trying to say is that I don't think you see the same hatred from extremist left that you do from extremist right when it comes to hating a certain group of people. It's interesting to me because when you look at just in general, what is, they don't want to be considered borderline Nazis or borderline this or borderline that. But when you look at some of these people, not all of them, but some of them, it is white nationalism. And we call it white nationalism because we don't want to use the term Nazi or we don't want to use the term KKK or whatever. But, you know, I mean, let's be real. We fought this shit a long time ago. And you know, we always see those memes, right? Where when is it, or how to punch a Nazi, you know, or whatever, because it's like the one thing, hey, it's okay. You know, even, you know, violence, a lot of people are okay with that as long as it's a Nazi. Because literally it's what we fought World War II over, you know? And I'm not saying I personally am violent. I'm not a violent person personally. I'm just saying that's the overall view on those type of people. And I just, you know, I think it's also interesting that the right is so worried about who is allowed to speak on these campuses and such, but yet they don't seem to be worried when it comes to elementary school, middle school, and high school about what's being taught in our curriculums. You see, a lot of the time, the conversation tends to be directed at that we need to not teach evolution, and we need to teach more in regards to the Bible. They will talk about their, they will almost always support charter schools because of the fact that you can control the curriculum better that way and choose what you would like to teach. I find it interesting that the same people who want to censor actual history in elementary school, middle school, and high school now want to go against censorship once they get to college. That seems crazy to me. But, yeah. You know, I mean, I think too, like I was kind of talking about with you before the show, what if you start to now, so where, what is freedom of speech, right? When it comes to being able to speak at a campus, is everybody going to get a chance now to speak at a campus? If I'm against fish, let's just say something ridiculous, right? I don't want fish to be around anymore. And I explained to everybody why fish are the worst thing for the world. And I decide that I have no basis as to why I don't like the fish, but I don't like them. And, you know, gosh, some people get sick from eating fish and people are allergic to it. So fish suck, right? And I decide that I want to take this rhetoric to every campus around the country. Does a campus now have to let a crazy like myself talk about how much fish suck just because now there's a freedom of speech, there's a campus freedom of speech rule that's been signed to executive order? I mean, I don't know maybe that writing is going to come as the executive order is signed, but I am definitely very curious about that.
Yeah. The other thing is, I mean, like, as somebody who went to college, and I did, like, especially after the 2016 election, I started going to the Republican Club meetings because I was like, clearly I missed something because I didn't see like Trump's win coming. I like believed the polls that Hillary was going to win, so I just wanted to like learn a little bit more. Yeah. And a lot of a lot of them would like talk about how like they feel marginalized. Like a lot of the Republicans at the club would talk about how they feel marginalized or unpressed on campus. And when pressed for details as to why, they'd be like, "Well, I don't feel comfortable like saying my views in class because I'm afraid I'll get yelled. I'll like another student will like yell at me or something." And it's like, that your the other students just expressing their freedom of speech too.
Right.
Like, you can't say that. You can't say like I feel like oppressed or marginalized because I am afraid of backlash. Like, that's just trying to restrict somebody else's freedom of speech.
No, exactly.
It's not protecting your own.
And, you know, in the case of this guy punching Hayden Williams, whether somebody believes that he deserves it or not, that's up to them. That's a personal decision. But at the end of the day, he got arrested because he punched Hayden Williams, okay? Mm-hmm. So if it's not physical and it's just something you're saying verbally against the right, say you're on the left, then that, like you just said, that's what I'm trying to figure out too, because that was something that was brought up time and time again from guys like Charlie Kirk and Ben Shapiro, which was, you don't get it. Every time we're at a campus, all the backlash we receive from people who don't want us there because of our message. But that's just...
They have a right to protest you. They have a right to object. Right.
So what do they want? Do they want, because they always make jokes about a safe space, but it sounds to me like they want a safe space. They want to talk to their people and they want to rile them up. They don't want any opposition. They don't want any resistance. They just want the people who are going to go, yeah, let's go out and beat those baby killing, you know, Democrats and their heathens that are part of that party and blah, 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 you know, and those socialist commies. I just find it very, very, the whole thing I find to be just petty. And like you said, you went and you actually listened in on some of the Republican meetings at your college. There is diversity if you want it. There is a place to go listen to other viewpoints if you do want to listen to other viewpoints. And I think that's very healthy to do, even if you don't connect with that side. And I think that I applaud you for doing that, by the way. I don't really get it, to be honest. I think it's just a really crazy thing to be wasting time on.
Yeah. And another thing that I also thought about, and another thing, is I was also like a really active member in the Black Student Union and a lot of other clubs and organizations on campus. And like the amount of, there was every meeting I went, almost every meeting, like there were some game nights, but it was mostly discussion focused. And like the discussions often got really heated. I mean, like the idea that like, just because like a person, like two people are like liberal or like left leaning or like means that they agree on things. There were people who were like advocating for like more conservative economic policies. There were like people from all over the political spectrum there are hashing things out. Sometimes like it got a little intense. Like I applaud the leaders of the clubs who moderated that more effectively. But I mean, like the idea that like it's campuses are somehow not a place where people can express their ideas is honest. It's just so ridiculous to me. Like there were times I was like sitting there like as if I was at a tennis match, like back and forth with these like ideas were evolving. And I just like this idea that like just because like a certain like just because like white nationalism like a pretty violent ideology is like reject as like not permitted by the university on account of the fact that this message is inherently violent in many ways doesn't mean that the university as like a university is not a place that fosters ideas. Just because if I wanted to like kill all Republicans, like, and I possibly could go onto a university and try and argue that, and I think that the university might allow me if I was just standing in a plaza handing out like flyers or something. Probably not though, if it's violent. But if I was like saying like Republican like lives don't matter or something like that, something crazy. Like I think that like, if it was, as long as it wasn't inherently violent, I think that I would be allowed to do that. But that doesn't mean the university has to give me money to promote that idea.
I think this
I'm so angry.
It's going to be great one day when you run for office and somebody goes back to this podcast and says, Aiden wants to kill her.
I'm not running for office. I'm never running for office. Maybe a school board position, but I'm not interested in that.
I agree with you. I'm angry about it. I think it's, you know, I'm, this is going to make me sound so cool, but you know, a lot of the time after in the spring and summer, I play in Ultimate Frisbee League. I still do. And afterward, you know, we're all very different. It's a very eclectic bunch that plays. And I'll have discussions with my friend who he's LGBTQ. And he is very, very much a Democrat, just like me. Well, I mean, I prefer the term progressive for myself, but let's, you know, just go with it. We both mainly vote for the same people, okay? But yeah, he and I have had discussions because he was very much a Hillary supporter in the last, moving up to the last election. I was always a Bernie supporter. We would have discussions, never that we were angry at each other, but we would have discussions about that. I've had discussions with friends of mine or acquaintances. I can't say I have a ton of Republican friends, but I do have a few acquaintances. I do have one Republican friend off the top of my head right now who he and I get along just great. He also doesn't like Trump, but you know, but so he's a, you know, at least a Republican who's not that far gone. But anyways, so I remember having some discussions with my Democrat friend who is, you know, a little bit different than me and who he likes in the party. And I remember another friend jumping in who was an absolute conspiracy theorist and who would start talking about chemtrails, and he and I would start going back and forth about conspiracy theories, and we would all talk about it. And it was something, I wouldn't say it got heated, like you said, your conversations did, but we would have these discussions with people who, you know, you have another friend who's libertarian who would jump in, and I'll still, by the way, stick to the fact that I believe libertarians are the dumbest group of people in the world, but that's just my personal opinion. But anyways, you know, but you'd have all these different viewpoints. We talk about them. It's not even a college setting, but it's a setting with friends. There's always going to be these discussions. I think that the Republicans and conservatives look at college campuses and certain areas where liberals exist, and they seem to think that it's just some sort of like special place where we only talk about those things and we never have arguments with, we don't have Republican friends, we don't have conservative acquaintances like that, and we never talk about these things. And they're just so off base, it's not even funny. But yeah, so, man. So yeah, so I guess that's where we're at there. I did have another thing that I wanted to talk about, and because I think we got so excited with that, it's like escaping my mind right now. Let's talk about, maybe I'll remember, let's talk a little bit about your new podcast. It's actually doing very well for its first episode. I think you talked a little bit in the past what it's about, but tell the listeners again and tell them why they should listen.
I just released the first episode of a podcast called Dibs, and the second episode's actually coming tomorrow, but it's called Dibs, Welcome to the Family, and it's about a group of people who are all conceived using the same sperm donor. The first episode is an interview with a lesbian woman and who conceived a child in 1995, and it's sort of her talking about her journey. I'm hoping to interview, like, start with, like, this group of people, but then also expand into talking about non-traditional families as a whole. And to talk about like the changing cultural landscape, and because when you talk about non-traditional families and family in general, I think that like how we perceive what a family is and what a family unit is a really interesting sort of measurement for a lot of changing cultural norms. Then like that goes throughout history, but like recently, like with the LGBT rights movement and with technological advancements like IVF or sperm donation in this case, these things are all complex and intertwined and are constantly influencing our perception of what it means to be a part of a family unit. So that's sort of what the podcast is about. It's available right now on iTunes, Podcoin. I got our podcast on Podcoin. The Conservation Conversations is also on Podcoin. Once I figured out how to do it, I just went ahead and I forgot. Sorry, I should have mentioned that or posted it on Twitter or something. But yeah, so anyways, you can listen to both this podcast and Dibs, Welcome to the Family on Podcoin, as well as Apple Podcasts, not on Spotify or Google Play yet, but hopefully within the next couple weeks, we'll get that up.
It's great. And I'm really stoked for you that it sounds like things are actually going well too with people who are listening to it. And who knows what's now in your future. You're going to do much better than me. I'm going to be sitting back here in my apartment going, look at Aiden go. She's left me now. She's popular. She's famous. I'm now doing the conservation conversations by myself. No, I'm kidding.
it's helpful when you have like a group of like 20 people who are like invested in the podcast, who all have their own networks that they can share it through.
It's awesome. No, it really is. It's a great thing to be bringing up. So I hope you know that. Yeah, absolutely. I'm very, very proud of you, Aiden, and for this venture. So yeah, good job. I'm going to obviously be a listener, and I'm stoked to hear what comes out in the future. So
thank you. I appreciate it.
Oh boy. So yeah, so it's been a week, and we'd love for all of you to subscribe to the Conservationist Conversationalist on
iTunes,
Spotify, Google Play. I mean, as we said last week, you don't have to subscribe on all of them. If you want to, go ahead. you can also listen to us on Podcoin now, because Aiden got done what I didn't get done.
You know, okay, so like our listeners aren't interested, but like Podcoin, like when you are searched for something on Podcoin, as it's searching, it says underneath it powered by Listen Notes. And I was like, what's Listen Notes? So I like, but it's only like while it's doing the searching thing. So I was like, I saw that and I was like, okay, so like Googled Listen Notes and it's just sort of like directory. So I just like put in the iTunes link. It was actually okay, but like they really don't make it easy to like figure out how to get your podcast on there.
And no offense to Podcoin, because I think it's really cool what they're doing, but they have not there's some stuff to work around the app, because you can't like friend people and stuff, even though you can be friends.
It's wild. Podcoin like has like a friends feature, and it'll even say like if you click on your friends, like you should friend some people, or like you should follow some accounts. And it's like you don't give anybody the option to search for people to friend or follow. Like, what are you doing? This is not related to conservationism or conversationalism.
Cool. Hey, we just said we were conservationist conversationalists. We didn't say that's always what the conversation would be about, right?
Fair enough.
By the way, and mine is my other podcast, not quite as important to the world as Aiden's, but
music is important. What are you
talking
about?
That's fair. So I host Lemonade Magazine podcast, by the way, too. If anybody wants to check that out, we will have both Aiden's other podcast and my other podcast in the description below here, and you'll be able to go and subscribe to those. And if you want a break from politics, and you want to listen to one of our other podcasts that almost never bring up politics. Oh, I can't speak for sure about Aiden's is just starting, but I can say that on Lemonade, we try our best not to talk too much about politics. But yeah, so if you want to go find those. And next week, we'll be back again on Tuesday, as always. Aiden, what was the best thing about this week? What was there a good thing you want to talk about this week?
My good thing is I started watching the YouTube series it's Anime Crimes Division. I'm not even into anime. I just really like ProZD, who's like the star of the show. So I watched it and it was very funny. So if you like anime, I wouldn't necessarily recommend it to people who don't like anime. It's very intense with the anime, but it's funny. It's still funny.
So my good thing this week is very simple. I saw a video of a dude, like, you know how the people start surfing on the wakes of boats now, and this guy is surfing on the boat wake and the dolphins are jumping up around him. I thought that has got to be the coolest thing you could possibly do, is be like just surfing off the wake of a boat and suddenly the dolphins are just like, you know, doing their thing. I thought it was great. That was the best thing I saw on the internet this week, so that's my best thing. Everybody, thank you so much for listening once again. And like I said, we'll be back next Tuesday, as Aiden started saying, and I've stolen from her. Stay dope.